This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to
a
two-year low.
There are, of course, complex reasons for that.
He was the big spender. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping can take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
G'day, Adam. How are you going?
Excellent. Thank you. Don't forget, if you're looking for a present for a loved one, perhaps a nice stocking filler or even a treat for yourself, then check out the Equity Mates Get Started Investing book, available online at Booktopia and at all good bookshops. Cracking read, lots of information to get you started on your investing journey. But Thomas, massive show coming up. New Zealand, well known for its hiking rates, that is. We'll find out where they've taken them now. And when life gives you lemons, you should sell them at the lemon markets. We'll find out why lemon markets might be important. And hey, Alexa, where did you put Amazon's billions of dollars? We'll find out a bit later on in the show. But first, Thomas, Cyber Monday today, Black Friday last Friday, call it what you want. Shops are having sales, as they often do. What's it all about?
Yeah, it's big now. It's I didn't quite realize, but it's become the busiest. Black Friday now eclipses Boxing Day as the busiest day of the year for
retail. Right?
Yeah, it's bigger than the whole week before Christmas.
It's much more convenient than Boxing Day.
I know.
Like, you've got the Boxing Day test match on. No one's going to the
Who
shops.
Who wants to go shopping after Christmas? I've never understood that.
People drag themselves there because they were getting bargains. Like, people used to line up, remember?
Yeah.
I guess lining up's a thing of the past too, because you've got, like, online now, which is...
But the Boxing Day sales are down now, last 4 years.
I don't even want to be online during the Boxing Day test, the first day of the Boxing Day test.
Mm.
It's what Boxing Day's for.
Right, yeah, just give you total focus to the cricket and or family.
Christmas days for family, Boxing days for me.
Right, that's fair enough.
We also have in our house, we have Christmas Day, we have Boxing Day, and then we have Do Nothing Day on the day after Boxing Day, just to ink in like doing absolutely nothing, which is very similar for me to Boxing Day where I'm watching cricket all day. But there's absolutely no commitments on Do Nothing Day. Anyway, I digress.
It's big now. Russell Cogan was saying that he expects the Black Friday to be 500% above average for trading.
Wow. Okay.
So massive. Hmm. And seems to be going off. Yeah, Jerry Harvey from Harvey Norman saying that, everyone's out there, they're expecting to do record trade.
Mm.
All the bargain hunters are out there. The biggest sales are in computers and electronics. There's still a lot of money in the community and people are looking to buy now instead of waiting.
Why is it called Black Friday? Where'd that come from?
Well, it's an American thing and it comes after Thanksgiving, but Thanksgiving's on the Thursday.
Yeah.
It was a bit like you were talking about last week with the holidays, so that you get a holiday on the Thursday and then Friday was a work day, but no one would show up to work.
Yeah, right.
And so they were saying it was like Black Friday, like the Black Plague.
Right. Because it has like negative connotations around it. When you hear like Black Friday, you think that's bad, must be. But no, it's good. It's bargains.
Retail's tried to rebrand it a few times. So like I think it was, Harvey Norman was calling it Big Friday.
Right.
But that hasn't really taken off. And then the retailer in America was saying that it's trying to create the myth that it was when retailers went back in the black.
Oh, okay, right.
But I think that's not that's not where it comes from.
Yeah.
And just trying to put a spin on it.
Mm.
Yeah, and then okay. I found that people weren't that excited to make retail shops profitable. It wasn't a motivator for consumers. So, yeah, but it's going gangbusters in Australia.
I did hear some interesting data this morning, actually. They said that Black Friday sales in the US were up 2.3% on last year, and they're talking in the trillions or billions of dollars that represents, mm-hmm. but saying that 2.3% is not actually a particularly big increase, like on this same time last year when there was lockdowns and COVID, and it's not even keeping up with inflation. So
true. Yeah, so yeah, it's good. I mean, that's what the Australian Retailers Association was saying. They're expecting $6.2 billion over the weekend, but that's up from $6 billion last year. So it's a fairly modest increase.
Mm.
But still, I mean, it's going up, which is, and that's sort of the interesting insight it gives us into the economy. Like, it looks like, you know, as Harvey Norman's saying, he's setting records. Retailers seem pretty happy with how it's going.
Mm.
That's despite the rate hikes that we've seen. So rate hikes don't seem to be denting consumer spending. They're not cutting into that savings pool that they've had. So Harvey Norman saying there's still a lot of money out there in the community.
Is that Harvey Norman saying that then people aren't cutting into their savings pools, or is that like, because that's the question, isn't it? Like, are people still just wealthy and well off, or are they kind of going, oh, bargains, I've got to get the bargain, so I'll put off whatever other, you know, like food purchases we need because we need a big screen for the World Cup, you know, knockout stage.
Yeah.
Which I totally understand and support and endorse. I've been looking myself at a big screen for the knockout stage of the World Cup.
Yeah, no, hard to know.
Mm.
But it does suggest we're not cutting back. I mean, it may be a pull forward. That's the other thing, like, because it's only 5 years old that it's taken off in Australia. Like, 5 years ago, there weren't Black Friday or Cyber Monday. That was, you know, it wasn't really a thing. And Boxing Day sales are on the way, are falling.
Mm.
So it might be we're just switching consumption from close to Christmas to now.
It makes sense too. Like, people have got a lot more money pre-Christmas, you know. Like, I think people, and they're looking for presents. Like, people are thinking right now about what to buy their loved ones for Christmas. Could I perhaps recommend Equity Mates Get Started Investing book as an option if you're out there looking? But people are, you know, they're looking to spend now because they want to buy things for Christmas. Whereas Boxing Day, you've just bought stuff all December. You've just got a heap of stuff that you got gifted as presents.
Yeah.
Probably not. Like, I was never that enthused about you know, buying anything at all come Boxing Day, early January. So spending's good though, right? Like, for the, I mean, well, it's good. It means that people are okay, but it, I guess the RBA would see that, wouldn't they? And they go, well, this is not good. Yeah. It's not what we want.
Not good. Ooh, need to see more unemployed people. It's what Phil's thinking. Look at them out there spending.
Yeah, you better be buying a big screen because you're going to be stuck at home soon once we get the unemployment numbers up. All right, Thomas, the RBNZ, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, what are they up to?
Yeah, they dropped a monster hike last week, 75 basis points. Yeah, that's the biggest increase ever for the RBNZ. Since they introduced an official cash rate back in 92. Yeah, so big lift. They've now had 400 basis points since October last year and leading the world, actually. New Zealand's number one. They've hiked.
Killing it.
Yeah, hiked the most of all. Well, one, they were first. They were first of the rate hike party, and they've hiked more than any other, well, anyone else in the Anglosphere.
I guess the obvious question then is why? Why are they so enthusiastic about raising rates?
Yeah. Well, part of it, I mean, they've got inflation like everywhere else. So CPI at 7.2% is too high. Food price inflation's at a 14-year high of 10%. So definitely too much inflation in the system. Things that are different from Australia is, one, they've got wages pressure. So they've got, average hourly earnings in the private sector up 8.6%, which is massive. So it does look like wages are getting a little out of hand potentially in New Zealand. So they need to stomp on that. But the other really interesting thing about New Zealand is that, you know, we talked about some countries, sort of a cultural difference around whether you have fixed or variable mortgages. In New Zealand, 90% of mortgages are fixed.
Right. For how long? Like, are they, like, because we talked about the US having like fixed 30 years or whatever.
Don't know. I think it's more like ours, like 2, 3, 4 years kind of thing. So a lot of people fixed during COVID at really low rates. So half the mortgage market over the next 12 months is going to come off fixed rates and reset at rates that are 300 basis points higher. So they're going to have a big, big reset coming. But what it means is like that 400 basis points that we've had out of the RBNZ hasn't touched consumers yet.
Right.
So with Australia, with, you know, with most of us on variable mortgages, the RBA hikes and people feel it immediately. They're like, oh, wow, okay, that's, you know, you get a letter from the bank and you, now, you, now you're paying more out of your income on your mortgage, and that slows things down. In New Zealand, that's not the case because everyone's half the, you know, half 90% of people aren't fixed. Half of them are fixed at super cheap rates with COVID. 400 basis points hasn't touched them yet.
Right.
And so it looks like the RBNZ's like, wow, I need to like, we need to sort of drop a psychological bomb on the New Zealand population.
They've resorted to mind games. Yeah. That's the Reserve Bank strategy. We need to get in their heads.
Yeah. We just keep niggling at them from silly mid on.
When they look out their window and they see the RBNZ van, they'll know.
Just a call comes up on your phone from RBNZ and it's just breathing. Yeah, so they got to shock people because it's, people aren't feeling the pain of it yet. And so they need to get it on the front page of the newspapers. They need to have that biggest rate hike ever kind of
shock
effect.
And awe.
Yeah, to get people to go kind of go, take a pause and go, oh, wow, okay, we've got some big rate hikes coming. I need to maybe slow things down.
Do they get it out ahead of Black Friday? Or probably would have been smart.
I think they did. I think they dropped it on Thursday.
Or in New Zealand, it's called All Black Friday in New Zealand. All right, before we take a break, Thomas, we did have a couple of listener questions come through, which we love getting. Will sent us an email, cve@equitymates.com. He says he's on a quest of self-development to financial literacy. Not something I can relate to, but each to their own. He said, we hear of major driver of current inflation being supply chain shortages, China lockdown, Ukraine war, etc. In a world where these things hopefully ease over the next few years, he's expecting that inflation-driven things may start to slow down. So he's kind of saying, as these things ease, why do we then not expect to see negative inflation as a result rather than just a reduction in inflation? Could we possibly see negative inflation?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, it's definitely possible. Historically, you don't tend to. It's like periods of deflation are very rare. And because the basket of goods is so broad and there's just a general tendency for things to go up, and then if cost pressures ease, businesses tend to leave their prices up and see if they can get away with expanding their margins first.
Right.
So, yeah, typically you don't see it. But in this period, I think it is quite possible because so much of it is energy related and energy prices have spiked and could correct quite sharply. And so they could go from being a big contributor to inflation to being a big, you know, subtracting from inflation in a substantial way. And if that sort of offsets the rest of the basket of goods, then you might see deflation. I don't think it's super likely. I think it's probably more likely that the pace will just slow. Yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely possible, and definitely possible with this period. But it'll be brief, I think, if it is.
So have we seen deflation before? Like, is that a thing?
It's definitely a thing. It's definitely a thing, but it's very rare. Like, I can't remember. Not in our lifetime in Australia, I don't think.
Oh, there you go. Oh, hopefully that answers your question, Will. And we had another one from Quinton who sent us a message via Instagram at CVE Podcast. He says, I just have a question about wages. I hear a lot of commentators saying that if we raise wages, then the economy will collapse because companies won't be able to pay their employees. I don't understand this logic when it seems higher wages would equal higher disposable income, which would equal higher profits. Seems like win-win to me, Thomas. Is this the wage price spiral risk that we talk about? If we just jack up everyone's wages, they'll spend more and prices will go up.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what he identifies there is an interesting point about like the wages are more like in terms of consumer spending, higher wages are a good thing. So if you're a consumer facing business, you like higher wages. not for your staff, but for other, if everyone else apart from your staff got high wages, that's a good thing. And it was sort of...
But hopefully your staff don't have any friends that are telling them they all got a pay rise.
Yeah. But I think it was Ford back in the early 1900s. He was saying that he liked to pay his wages, workers, good wages, because then they would go out and buy cars. So he sort of identified that. And I think Marx sort of, it was one of the internal contradictions of capitalism, is that companies want to suppress wages, but wages are necessary for consumption and for business profits. So he's saying that's one of the internal contradictions that's going to ultimately lead to capitalism's collapse. Hasn't yet, but you know, clock's still running.
It's early days.
Early days, yeah.
The scheme of things.
Yeah. So it's a tension. It's a dynamic tension in the economy. Like wages, higher wages are good sometimes in some, depends on the context. But
thank you so much for sending your questions in. Don't forget, you can, of course, do it yourself, cve@equitymates.com, if you want to send us an email, or via the website, equitymates.com/CVE, or do what Quinton did and send us a message via Instagram or Facebook at CVE Podcast. But for now, let's take a quick break, grab a word from this week's sponsor, and be back with more Comedian versus Economist right after this.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. You're on Comedian versus Economist. Thomas, it's been a few weeks since the collapse of FTX. We covered it with a special bonus episode last week. If you haven't heard that yet, go and check that one out. How are we now? Has crypto sorted itself out? We're back on the straight and narrow.
Well, yes, the market seems to have stabilized, but there's a lot of, it's only 1 week. 1 week doesn't make a stable market. And still a lot of questions hanging over there. Over the past week, the big questions have been around Genesis, which is a prime broker, so sort of an institutional.
Phil Collins.
Yeah.
Phil Collins band.
That's right.
he's got a stable, he's released his own coin.
Genesis are a prime broker, so that means they're sort of an institutional lender in the crypto space, quite important for that sort of institutional money, it sounds like. Big questions around them over the past week. The timeline's pretty funny, is it, watching it play out. So on November 8th, they said they've got no material net credit exposure to the FTX collapse.
Yeah.
Then the day after that, on November 9th, they said, actually, we've lost $7 million. The day after that, they said, oh, actually, it's $175 million. Then on November 16th, they went, oh, actually, no, you can't take your money out anymore. We've got to freeze it.
Yeah.
The day after that, they said, actually, we need $1 billion. Otherwise, we need to raise some capital. And November 21st, they said, we're going to go bankrupt if we don't get that money. And then the day after that, I said, actually, no, we're not going to go bankrupt. That's a rumor. So
that's a rumor that we started when we asked for $1 billion bailout.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know why you thought we were in trouble. That we're just a regular company looking for $1 billion to bail us out of a liquidity crunch.
Yeah. In the middle of a crypto shakeout.
Yeah.
I don't know where you got that idea from. I mean, I think it's really interesting in the crypto space right now. There's a sort of a big question around trust.
Hmm.
There's a really interesting paper in economics written in 1970 called The Market for Lemons, written by George Akerlof, who went on to win a Nobel Prize in 2001. Hmm. But he talks about what happens in a market when there's information asymmetry between buyers and sellers, specifically when sellers have more information than buyers. So like the thought experiment is, you imagine a used car market. and there's good cars in the market and there's lemons. And if you're buying a car, you don't know which is which. You don't have that information. And so what in economic theory, what you're willing to pay is the average price of the value of a lemon and the value of a good car.
Yeah.
So if a good car's worth 5,000 and a lemon's worth 1,000, you're going to pay something in the middle of that because you just don't know.
Maybe add on extended warranty.
Well, yeah, hang on, we get to that. So in the absence of any sort of institutional factors like that, right. you're only willing to pay that average. But as a seller, you know your car is worth good money. But buyers aren't willing to pay good money. And so you leave the market. You just go like, well, I know my car's worth more than that. I'm not gonna sell it.
Right.
And then you get this kind of like spiraling dynamic where as the good cars leave the market, the average price people are willing to pay goes down. That pushes more good sellers out of the market. The price goes down. And eventually the market is killed. You have no market left at all.
Right.
And you say, and there's sort of like a model that proves how that dynamic plays out. And I think we're sort of seeing something a bit like that in the crypto space, is that there's a big asymmetry between the big players in the space who know what they're doing and know what their holdings are and all of that. And then what's happening with the consumers of these products, where they don't know, you know, what's happening behind the scenes. And in the absence of any institutional factors, that has the potential to kill the market completely, because as a consumer, you don't know what you're getting and you're not willing to offer value. The good players leave the space and you get this sort of death spiral.
I'm not convinced that anyone knows the value, though, in this crypto space. Like, isn't that the problem? Like, the sellers don't know the value, the buyers don't know the value. Everyone's just like, they're just trying to sell, hoping that there's buyers, and there are buyers because people are like, well, I think it's probably going to go up.
Yeah.
So
it's a problem.
Like, at least if you buy a car, you get a car. Yeah. It might have a broken engine, or it might have a flat tire or whatever, but you still got a car.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, but it's also like, I'm not just talking about like shit coins. This is also about like your custodians and your lenders in the crypto space when it's unregulated. So the interesting thing about what Akerlof says, this is where you get these institutions to preserve the market. You then get institutions either like at a regulatory level where the government comes in and say, if you're found to be selling lemons, you're going to get prosecuted and you'll do jail or whatever. So you have like some kind of government set regulatory settings, or you have voluntary settings where like the warranties and guarantees and that sort of thing. And that's how, and that's how the players preserve the integrity of the market and go like, I'm willing to offer a guarantee. So that way, you know that you're getting a good deal. This is sort of where crypto, I think, is now facing, is like, do you build trust by going down the regulatory route and building sort of regulatory infrastructure around the crypto space? Or do you try and build it internally and by proof of custodian, proof of assets, that sort of stuff, and somehow do it internally? The interesting thing about like thinking about doing it internally, like, you know, you think about a used car lot offering a warranty, that's a voluntary arrangement, but it's still a contract, and it's still a contract that is enforced by the meta level, you know, infrastructure. If your used car lot sells you a dud and they've given you a warranty, you've got a legal contract that you can then take them to court and say, hey, they promised they would do this. The court and the police system and the force of government comes and goes, yeah, you've got to actually uphold that. So even though it's a voluntary decentralized arrangement, it still relies on centralized infrastructure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I guess the challenge is in that example that the used car salesman sells the car and offers the warranty, and your car breaks down the next day, it's unlikely that you've gone back to the car lot to find that it imploded overnight. And the owner of the car lot is living in the Bahamas and no one can find him.
Yeah. So, another one of the challenges for crypto.
So there's no ACCC or whatever, or regulators, courts, police, whatever in the crypto sphere.
No, that's right. And so you might see players, I think, emerge in the crypto space that like an auditor of sorts to say like, you know, we audited Binance and, you know, we don't
even
know.
Wasn't she in the Bahamas with the owner?
Yeah, that's right. So it pushes back that layer of trust one level. We go, oh, no, they got audited. But then you've still got to trust the auditor, right? Like, so there's still that problem. And having a blockchain in the mix doesn't solve that fundamental trust problem.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of feel like with crypto is my sense. Like, okay, so I'm a bear now, so I'm popping off now that crypto's collapsed. Mm. And I'll go quiet again in the next boom. But for now, it's like it looks to me like crypto is just reinventing the monetary and government settings from first principles. And they go, like if we just invent money and let people do whatever they want in the unregulated space, people get ripped off and lose heaps of money. Maybe we need regulation.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see the first shitcoin come out with a warranty, some price beat guarantee. If you buy Doge at 0.003 cents and it goes and it drops to 0.2, we'll pay you the difference. All right, Thomas, finally on the show, Amazon, news out of Amazon, Alexa's in trouble. What's happened to her?
Yeah, Business Insider was running the story this week that Amazon's thinking about cutting Alexa loose. Saying that, Amazon's worldwide digital unit, which is responsible for Alexa and other devices, lost $3 billion in the first quarter of 2022 alone.
Wow.
So, potentially $12 billion a year, just bleeding cash.
When you said thinking of cutting Alexa loose, I thought they were, like, talking about taking the shackles off and just letting her go, she's sentient now. We're putting Alexa, Bezos is gone. We're putting Alexa in charge. She's running Amazon now.
So I'd be like, hey, Alexa, buy some Tim Tams. Not for you, fatty. So bleeding, $12 billion a year, that's bleeding a lot of money. And Amazon, Amazon shares are down 45%, I think, so far this year. They're in the, they're doing it tough, looking to cut costs. They're looking to cut 10,000 lay off 10,000 people, like 10,000 engineers from that devices division.
Man, I wonder how they're going to find out. Just be like, hey, Alexa, how's my commute to work looking this morning? That's pretty good. You don't have a job anymore. All right. That's a lot, though. 10,000.
Yeah.
10,000 employees.
Substantial. It's kind of surprising to me, and not when you look at the numbers, but like I'd thought Alexa was crushing it. Like, it's out there. It dominates the smart speaker market. Like, it's got 69% market share.
Mm.
Google Home's at 25%. Apple HomePod at 5%. Facebook Portal I'd never even heard of. That's 1%.
Sounds like most people have never heard of it.
It's a portal to the metaverse. So it's 69% market share. That's crushing it. And, and popular, like it's out there. It's definitely out and around.
Mm.
Good sort of reach, but they just hadn't found any way to monetize it.
That's the thing. I remember I brought a Google Home and Anna was like, what does it do? And I'm like, you can ask it stuff. And she's like, like what? And I'm like, well, like the weather. And you do the basic things. You're like, look, weather. What's the weather today? And it tells you the weather. Yeah, but then you go, oh, okay, well, now we can maybe set an egg timer. That's kind of like your uses run out really quickly.
Pretty quick, hey?
Yeah.
They were trying to push people to buy stuff. The hope was that people would get the Alexa and then use it to buy stuff off Amazon.
Mm.
But it just wasn't taking off. And it actually, it just sounds like a dumb idea. Like, I just wouldn't trust voice AI to order the right thing for me. Like, I want to look at the products and compare a few products. And
I mentioned weather. Like, that's bread and butter, right? That's like easy, slam dunk. Like, we often ask Google the weather. And like, I live in Brighton in South Australia. And it gives us the weather for Brighton, not even Brighton in Victoria, but Brighton in the UK. So you take that kind of level of AI and accuracy and you go, am I really going to order like my $3,000 TV through Amazon, through Alexa, or even order a pizza? Like, you order a Hawaiian pizza, you're going to get an Italian pizza. Like, it just, it's nowhere near accurate enough.
Mm.
I read this thing the other day. It was interesting. There was a thing talking about the smartphone and how the smartphone is still the king after, like, lots of different technologies have come along trying to, like claiming to sort of be smartphone killers. And I think voice was one of them, you know, and there's things, other things like Google Glass or the glasses or whatever. But that smartphones are still the way that most people like to kind of interface with the world, especially if you're browsing products.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's just an idea that's just not going to take off. Privacy is also a bit of concern with, like, it's one thing for me, like the idea of this is something, a device in my house constantly listening to everything we say. Just think like, oh.
Oh, you old fuddy daddy.
Yeah, I know.
See, I like it, but I'm trying to outsource as much of my parenting as I can to these devices. Yeah, like I heard a lot of parents don't want these things like in their kids' bedrooms, for example. But for me, to be able to tell the smart speaker in the living room to tell the smart speaker in the kids' bedroom to be quiet and go to sleep, that saves me getting up and walking. But it's a double-edged sword because my kids have now started fact-checking me on Google. Like, we'll be having dinner. And they'll be like, hey, Dad, how far is it from from here to Melbourne? I'm like, I don't know, it's about 8 hours. And they're like, oh, really? And they'll literally just like in front of me, they'll ask Google like how far it is and just I'll be like, I told you. They're like, well, yeah, we just want to check with Google.
Yeah.
Emily actually wants, she said to me the other day, she's seven. She said, I said, what would you like to do when you grow up for a job? She goes, I want to be Google. She thinks Google's got a pretty sweet gig. She just sits there, answers questions, gets to chat to people.
Maybe she can replace the 10,000 engineers at Amazon.
No, I think I might have some work to do on my kids' relationship with technology. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for home automation. I love the home automation stuff. But yeah, I think the smart speakers and all that, I can see that they haven't really taken off in our house and we've got them everywhere. They just interrupt us when we're watching TV. All right, that does us for this week, I reckon. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Don't forget to check out all the other great shows across Equity Mates Media, including The Dive, which is now the award-winning The Dive, hosted by Sasha Kelly from Equity Mates Media. And Sasha also does production work on this show. She produces each and every episode. She is an amazing person and she has an amazing show as now certified by the recent podcasting awards. So if you haven't heard it, go and check it out. But that's all for us for this week. We look forward to chatting to you again next week. It's bye for now.
You have been listening to an Equity Mates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. Equity Mates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.